Stand and grab your handouts. We'll continue our series. Oh, actually, I did have one card I was going to read you. This is from Miss Goss, okay? And it kind of fit. To Pleasant Plains Church and our pastor, Brother John Utley, and family. Thank you for your thoughts and prayers and the cards I received from you. Exclamation point. I miss you and love you very much. May God bless you as you serve Him, Miss Elsie Goss. So continue to be praying for Miss Goss. She is healing up very well from her broken hip a while back. But continue to be praying for her as well. The Lord would continue to give strength and grace. And by the way, let me encourage you when you're shaking hands or greeting everybody, not shaking hands so much, but greeting everybody, wave to the online folks. So, Ms. Goss, we love you, and it's good to see you as well. Take your Bibles, please. We're going to be in a lot of different passages here tonight. But let's first turn to Proverbs chapter 27, if we can. Proverbs 27. We'll be in Proverbs quite a bit tonight, but we'll be kind of flipping around a little bit here this evening. As we talk about, continue our series on money, and specifically tonight dealing with debt, okay? So dealing with money, dealing with debt, dealing with all those things. Let's real quick go through our foundations that we did before, and you have it in your handout. The bottom layer, let's say it all together, the very bottom layer is what, folks? Contentment. Good. And one more time, nice and strong. It's what? Contentment. And we talked about before, if we don't have contentment, then the whole thing kind of falls apart, doesn't it? If we are not content with what God's given us, by the way, like I said before, it's not complacency, but it's certainly not covetousness. Contentment is right in the middle. Okay? So contentment is going and understanding, hey, God has been good. God will provide and meet my needs, but I'm not going to sit back and just be lazy. I'm going to work. I'm going to labor, but I'm not going to be covetous and go beyond what God has provided and want what God hasn't provided. I'm going to be content where God's given us. Okay? And so we talked about contentment and we laid that foundation. Number two, let's say our second foundation. What is it? Stewardship. One more time, nice and strong. Stewardship. And stewardship is the reality that what we have is a gift from God. God gave it to us, and therefore we need to use it in a way that God prescribes. So our money is not our own. Our money is not just for our own satisfaction, although certainly that's fine in moderation. But our money is to be used in a proper way as a steward, as God's servant that He's entrusted. So we need to be faithful with it. Number three, let's say it. What is it? Generosity. One more time. Generosity. Good. And generosity, yes, I'm saying it multiple times, so you guys don't forget, okay? Josh and Rachel are laughing at me.
No, okay. Laughing.
You're laughing at him. Okay. Yeah, that's probably true. Did you mispronounce generosity?
I said contentment.
Okay. Well done. Well done. That's why we say it twice. So, generosity. And generosity is us being willing to give to the Lord, of course. Obviously, everything we have is His. So giving to the Lord, tithing, but then beyond that, giving to those that are in need and helping those that are needy. Okay? So that's what we've looked at. And so that's kind of the base of the pyramid, if you want to think of it. Now we're laying the top blocks, okay? And the top blocks are a little bit more practical, a little bit more general, okay? So tonight we're going to talk specifically about debt. Debt. If we can, go to the next slide. Brother Brian, this is the U.S. debt clock. Now, it might be a little bit hard to read, okay? But let me kind of help you out. If you want to, at some point, maybe not during the service, okay? Because for those of us especially that are ADD, you might just be watching the numbers click up, okay? But the U.S. debt clock is constantly running. It has a website. This is just a screenshot of the website. As of when I put it in the slide, probably about, I don't know, 5 o'clock or so, the U.S. national debt was about $28 trillion. Okay? That's a big number. Now, you say, what on earth is that number? That's an insanely huge number, especially considering, if you see U.S. federal tax revenue, you see that one over there? I know it's kind of hard to see, but in the second column over, our total that we take in within one given year is only $3.5 trillion. So, I want to put that into perspective so we can see it, so we can kind of get an idea of our nation, and especially this debt thing. If we can go to the next slide, Brian. The next slide. That's the equivalent of a family that makes $50,000 a year. Let's just say one family makes $50,000 a year owing $385,000. By the way, that's not for a house. That's $385,000 in, like, credit card debt. Okay? That's how the interest pays out. Okay? That is a huge number, correct? If you owe $50,000 and you, or you make $50,000 and you owe $385,000, that's a big, big problem. Okay? We have a problem as a country with debt, correct? Yes? We would agree with that. Can I take it a step further? We have a problem as individuals with debt. Can we go to the next slide, Brian? Okay, this is the U.S. Credit card debt burden in each state. I don't know if you can see it, but North Carolina here, it has 8,062. Here's what that means. 8,062. That number means this, that your average taxpayer in the United States, if you took, or in the state of North Carolina, you took all the taxpayers, you took all of their credit card debt, averaged it out, the average number is $8,062. $8,062 for your average person. Obviously, some people have less. I have zero. Okay? So certainly some people have far more. Now, here's what they did, though, on this chart, which, again, it's kind of hard for you to read from here, and I understand that. Okay? In North Carolina, you see those little yellow circles on there? That's how long it would take if you took 15% of your total pay and applied it to the credit card debt. Can anyone see what that number is for North Carolina? 14. That means that it would take 14 months for your average person paying 15% of their total take-home pay to pay their way out of credit card debt. 14
months?
14 years.
It is months. It is months. So 1 year, 2 months of nonstop paying 15% of your take-home income. That is a big number, friends. That is a big number. To go even further, though, if we can, let's go even further and let's find my phone. What is the average? What do you believe the average percentage APR for a credit card is in the United States? Any ideas?
24.
24? 24 is not the average, actually, according to what I looked up. It's 16. 16. So let's use our number: 8,062 times point, or actually 1.16. Okay, that means that next year your amount would be $9,351. Does that make sense? So if you go times 0.16, you are each year, your average North Carolina person, you're each year adding 1,000, let me get the exact number, $1,289 per year more to this number. Am I making sense here? We as a state, we as a nation, have a problem with debt, correct? Yes? Now, I believe that a big part of that is our foundational things that we just looked at. Okay? We don't have contentment. We always want a little bit more. Wouldn't you say that's true? We want a little bit more. We went shopping on our little break, and we went to an outlet mall. And we went to the outlet mall, every single place was, oh, well, here's this, and oh, here's that, and there's sales everywhere. They're trying to get you to buy. Everybody wants your money, right? That's what happens. But here's the reality. If we as Christians are not careful, our money will not work for us. We will not be stewards of our money. Our money will own us. Correct? We will be slaves to our money. Have you found that to be true in your life? Right? If you don't control your money will control you. Right? Very quickly, this number gets out of control if you don't control it. So that's what we're going to look at. Some biblical guidelines, some biblical criteria, okay? Biblical foundations dealing specifically with debt. Number one, debt changes relationships. Now, let me just say real quick, okay, so you know where I'm coming from. I hate debt. Anybody else in here that just hates debt? Good. I hate debt. I hate debt, I hate debt, I hate debt. Right now, the only debt that we have is in our house that we still own. And Wilson, by the way, we have a couple of our former teens that are barely kings anymore in the back here. But that's the only debt that we have. We owe right now $38,000. That is all the debt that we have in our name. Praise the Lord for that, by the way. But and that's just in a house, okay? We've never had debt on a car. We have bought used cars that we paid for out of pocket. We don't have any credit card debt. We avoid those kind of things. We don't have any of that stuff, okay? Okay? So you know where I'm coming from, okay? I might be slightly biased, but I believe it's based on scripture, okay? Number one, debt changes relationships. Like I said, we are going to be in a few different passages, but let's look if we can. Numbers 22 and verse number 7. I think I said number 26 earlier. Numbers 22 and verse number 7. Verse you've probably heard before, but nonetheless a very important verse. By the way, we're going to be in several passages, okay, so kind of keep your fingers ready, and I might call on some people to look up some different ones. Proverbs 22 and verse number 7. Can we all read it together? Can we do that here tonight? Let's look at it. Proverbs 22 verse 7. Ready? Here we go. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Number one, what we're looking at is debt changes relationships. Number one, it changes the relationship with the lender. Okay? Here's what this means, nice and simply. If you are a debtor to someone else, then your relationship has changed. Let's use an illustration, can we? Let's use John Ottaway up here, buddy. Okay? Let's say that John owes me money. Oh, man. I'm a loan shark, man. Now, if John owes me money, then there would be, you would understand, there would be a different relationship than John and I have currently, correct? Yes? Right? I have someone that rents our house back in Wilson, okay? We were friends before, I know him, we're still friends, but there's clearly a different relationship, right, between the person that rents my house now compared to just when we, how we were before, right? Wouldn't you say that's true? Right? Money in a relationship changes that relationship, correct? That's what it's saying. Nice and simply, friends, it's not like I, who owes BB&T Bank, okay, for my house, it's not like I want to go and hang out with BB&T Bank. Correct? Right? I owe them money. Right? BB&T, if I don't pay my mortgage every month, guess what BB&T can do? They can take my house. Okay? There is a difference in relationship, and that's what this passage is saying. Nice and simply, it says that the borrower is servant to the lender. Number one, the lender, he becomes the ruler, you become the slave. When you choose to go into debt, you are literally saying, hey, I am putting myself in slavery until this debt is paid off. That's what you're saying. Quite literally, you're saying, if you get paid a certain amount per hour, you're saying, hey, this debt is worth this many hours of my life. Does that make sense? Correct? Let's say you get paid, I don't know, let's just use minimum wage, just to be nice and simple. Well, let's actually use the potential new minimum wage, $15. Okay? You're saying, if you go into debt for $100, then you go and you're basically saying, hey, I am willing, I am ready to go and to give you, what would it be, 8 hours of my life. Am I making sense here? You are now a slave to that credit card. You are now a slave to that debt until that debt is paid off. Am I making sense? You have to understand that to understand debt. Okay? You are quite literally a slave to your debt. It changes relationships. By the way, let me just say real quick, that has extrapolation further, right? I don't believe that you should be lending money to other people, other fellow Christians. You know why? Because it changes the relationship, right? I have not, nor will I ever go to my dad, who is fairly wealthy. I will not go to my dad and ask my dad for money. Why? Because it changes our relationship. Does that make sense? It changes our relationship, and I don't want that. The relationship, to me, is more valuable than the money. Correct? Am I making sense? Okay, so, number one, it changes the relationship. Number one, with the lender. Number two, it changes the relationship with family and friends. Look, flip over, if you can, to Proverbs chapter number 6. Proverbs chapter number 6. Proverbs 6 is talking specifically about a thing called, in the Bible, it's called surety. Surety. S-U-R-E-T-Y. And surety is basically a something that you've probably heard of before. It's called, in our day, do you know what it is?
Collateral.
Or actually, more like cosigning, actually, technically. Here's the idea of it. Okay? Joshua, come on up. Okay? Joshua, does Joshua have any credit history, yes or no?
No.
No, actually, no, I'm just kidding. No, he doesn't. Joshua has no credit history. Okay? Now, I have credit history. Okay? I have a mortgage, right? I pay my bills on time. I have a credit history. Joshua does not have a credit history. Let's say that Joshua someday wants to go and he wants to buy a car. Okay? It's a good illustration because kids do this, right? They want to buy a car. So Joshua wants to buy a car. Joshua doesn't have any money to buy a car. Right? Because he spends it all on video games and stuff like that. Okay. So Joshua has no money to buy a car, but he wants to buy a car. So Josh comes to me and Josh says, hey, Dad, can you go and can you co-sign? Can you agree to pay for the car if I can't pay it? Good idea, biblically, bad idea. Tell the person next to you. Good idea, bad idea. Tell the person next to you. Go. And this has nothing to do with your character, buddy. Good idea or bad idea, folks? Bad idea, biblically. Now you say, oh, well, you must hate your son. No, I don't hate my son. I don't hate my son. Why is it a bad idea, friends? Because I'm changing the relationship. You with me here? Because now all of a sudden, I'm going to have to be on Joshua to make sure Joshua makes his payments. Because if he doesn't, guess who's paying them? I am. Am I making sense? Look at Proverbs chapter 6. Thanks, Josh. You can have a seat. Proverbs chapter number 6, verse number 1. Proverbs 6, verse number 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if you've co-signed for your friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go, humble thyself, make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Here's what Solomon here is saying to his son. He's saying, hey, if you go and you co-sign for a friend, right, then here's what you need to do. You need to right away, tomorrow, actually not tomorrow, today before you even go to bed, you need to go and pay that off. You say, what? I didn't want to pay it. And you shouldn't have co-signed for it. Because in co-signing for it, you said you would pay. Am I making sense? So if you co-sign for it, biblically, here's what Solomon said. Solomon says, today, before you go to bed, go, make sure thy friend. That is, pay off the whole debt. Today. You say, wow, that's pretty steep. That's what Solomon said to his son. So that's what I'm saying to you. Am I making sense here? That's God's view on it. Why? Because it changes a relationship. It breaks up family and friends. Listen, friends, when I came 4 years ago, I've been here 4 years, okay? We've had several funerals and things, people that have passed away. And one thing that I have found with people that have passed away is, man alive, family fight over money. Oh, my soul, family fight over money. People that went and they had property or something like that, then they get rid of the property and families arguing and fighting over it. Can I tell you, friends, you don't want that. You don't want to go there. Don't let money ruin your relationships. Nice and simply, let's go through this. That cannot be between friends or else they won't be friends. The borrower is servant to the lender. You change that relationship. You no longer become friends when that happens. And by the way, every time, you say, oh, but I just want to help. No, you're not helping. You're not helping in the long run. You might be helping right now. But at some point, they will miss a payment. And when they miss a payment, that relationship starts to crumble. Correct? Yes? It happens. So you need to just avoid it. Avoid it, avoid it, avoid it. Get out of those relationships. If you have been a co-signer, get out as fast as you can. Find a way to get out. By the way, can I say nice and simply? If you can't give it, then don't lend it. Am I making sense? If I can't, let me use the illustration of Joshua again. Josh, come on up here again. Okay? The illustration of Joshua in a car. Okay? At some point, sooner than I'd like to admit, Joshua will need a car. Correct? When that day comes, Joshua comes to me and Josh says, hey, Dad, can you sign for a car? Can you co-sign for a car? Now, let me ask you. If I can't buy Joshua a car, then why should I co-sign for a car for Joshua? Am I making sense? Because in co-signing, I'm saying I will make payments, correct? So if I can't make the payment, then I shouldn't co-sign in the first place. If I can make the payment, then why would I not give Joshua the car? Correct? Am I making sense here? Yes? If I can make the payments, I don't have a problem with you going and buying the car outright for your child. I don't have a problem with that. Okay? I don't have a problem with that at all. I'm not going to do that, Joshua, but I don't have a problem with it. But, catch this, I do not believe biblically, based on this passage and a lot of others that we'll look at, I do not believe biblically that you should go and just co-sign for somebody and then hope that they'll make the payments. They won't. They won't. Am I making sense? Won't happen. Because they have the safety net of you. Correct? I will always make my mortgage payments. You know why? Because if I don't make my mortgage payments, guess what happens? They take my house. Correct? But if I had my dad to fall back on, right? Then there's no need for me to always make my mortgage payment because dad will pay that mortgage payment. Am I making sense here? Right? Correct? So I will and always have sacrificed to make my mortgage payment so that I can keep my house. When you co-sign, you lose all of that. Am I making sense? Just being nice and biblical, nice and practical. Thanks, Josh. You can have a seat. Until the next time. Okay, so with family and friends. Debt cannot be between family and friends. Pay off co-sign loans personally to save the relationship. Make sure thy friend, as we looked at. Okay? Debt changes relationships. Number one, with the lender. Number two, with family and friends. Number three, with the future. Flip over again to Proverbs 22, can we? Proverbs chapter number 22, we'll be looking at several different passages, but Proverbs 22 and verse number 26. Proverbs 22, verse number 26. Again, talking about surety and co-signing. Proverbs 22, verse 26. It says there this, be not thou one of them that strike hands, that is, that go and make deals. Okay? Okay? Continue on. Or them that are sureties for debts. Okay? Again, you're going and you're co-signing for those kind of things. If thou hast nothing to pay, why, catch it, should he take away thy bed from under thee? What's it saying? It's saying nice and simply, hey, don't co-sign, don't make a deal, don't do those kind of things, because guess what's going to happen? At some point, the more debt you have, at some point, problems come, correct? Emergencies come up, yes? Has anyone ever had a financial emergency that you weren't planning? Yes? You had one? Yep, if you haven't, you're gonna. Okay, we all do. I remember when Becky, back when we were in Wilson, she all of a sudden started having real bad pains in her stomach. We didn't know what it was. And so she had a little bump on her stomach. We weren't sure. So it was after we had Esther. And so we didn't really know what it was, but she would get really, really intense pain. So we didn't figure it out. Finally, I was doing research online. I'm like, it kind of sounds like a hernia. We went and got it checked out. We didn't have very good insurance. By the way, you should have insurance. Okay? But we didn't have very good insurance at that point. We did have something, but we didn't have great insurance. And so they looked at it. They said, yeah, you have a hernia. And as a matter of fact, it's fairly strangulated. We need to get surgery on this right away. So they went and they did surgery. And sure enough, I got slammed with a $30,000 bill. That's encouraging. Right? Insurance went and paid for about half of it, but I got slammed with $15,000 that they wouldn't pay. Okay? Nice and simply, friends, problems come, correct? Problems come. At that point, I wasn't planning on a lot of financial problems to come, was I? None of us ever are. I wasn't planning a $15,000 loan that I had on that. I wasn't planning on having to pay $700 a month, okay, for medical bills. Wasn't planning on that, but that happened, Correct? And if you go and you go out, stretch your neck out financially, guess what's going to happen? A problem's going to come and it's going to chop it off. Okay? That's what will take place. Nice and simply, it changes your relationship with the future. Creates a future uncertainty. Look at it, verse number 26 again. You have nothing to pay. Or verse 27, rather. You have nothing to pay. So, you go and you basically say, oh, well, yeah, it's fine, I'll pay it off. Oh, yeah, it's fine, I'll make this deal. Oh, yeah, it's fine. But if you don't have it, you create a financial uncertainty in your life. You don't know what'll be in tomorrow. You don't know what's coming. So don't act like you do. You don't know that you're going to get a paycheck this next week. You don't know that. Hopefully you will, but you don't know that. So don't get into debt thinking that you will. Does that make sense? Don't plan ahead thinking you'll be okay when you don't really have control over that. Next, creates future danger. Verse 27, he goes and gives an extreme illustration clearly, but verse 27, look at it. Why should he take away thy bed from under thee? The picture is quite literally, the guy's sleeping and the guy that takes stuff when you don't pay your bills. Repo, there you go. The repo man comes along and what does he do? He literally takes the bed that you're sleeping on. Okay? It's obviously an extreme illustration, but that's the point. Right? When you go and you give out and you give out nothing, and you go and you face this uncertainty that you don't even know that you'll have a bed to sleep on, quite literally. Am I making sense? Debt changes relationships. Can we all agree with that? Yes? Debt changes relationships. Number two. Debt carries requirements. Biblically, there are several requirements that debt carries. Let's just go through these quickly. Number one, for borrowers, Psalm 37, verse 21. Can someone look that up for us? Psalm 37, 21. Somebody pop your hand up. Psalm 37, 21. Waylon, I saw your hand first. Romans 13, verse 8. Can someone look that one up for us? Romans 13, 8. Okay, John, can you get Romans 13, 8? John and Wendy. John Roberts. Okay, and then for lenders, let's look up Deuteronomy 29:19-20. Can someone look that up? Malcolm, I saw your hand. Robbie, if you can look up Deuteronomy 23:19-20. Let's see here. That'll do for right now. Okay, so let's go through. Number one, for borrowers, debt carries requirements. Number one, you must pay back all of it in full. Psalm 37:21. Who had that one, Waylon?
Wicked borrowers.
Good. The wicked borrow and pay not again. But the righteous show mercy and give. Nice and simply, what's it saying? It's saying, if you take out a debt, then you should pay off that debt. Nice and simply. That's why I'm opposed to bankruptcy. You need to try to work it out. Now, listen, I understand bankruptcy exists. I don't have a problem necessarily with going and trying to get those things resolved, but I've seen a lot of times, I used to deal with financial advising stuff, okay, 4 years. I've seen a lot of times people go and they rack up debts on purpose, right? Then they file bankruptcy just to get out of the debts. That is not a Christian thing. I worked for a Christian company dealing with people that didn't pay their debts, quite literally, for 4 years. And I saw over and over and over again people go and they rack up these huge bills and then, oh, bankruptcy! Right? And then what do? A couple years later, rack up huge debts, bankruptcy! Right? Because they haven't taken care of the need. They haven't taken care of the problem. Okay? You need to try to pay off the debt because quite literally you went and you said, I will pay this. When you signed up for the credit card, when you signed, you said, I'm going to pay this. So pay it. Okay? For borrowers, number two, biblical requirement. Generally, you need to avoid borrowing money. Romans 13, 8. Who had that one? Okay, John, go ahead.
Owe no man anything but the law of another, and you the law of another have to hold the law.
Good. This is talking specifically in a governmental context, but it really applies to everything. He's saying nice and simply, hey, don't owe anybody anything except loving each other. Nice and simply, folks, here's the reality. If you are known more for your financial debt than you are for your relationship and for your walk with God, there's a problem. That's what the Bible says. Does that make sense? There's a problem. So don't do that. That's the expectations for borrowers. For lenders, there's a lot of expectations as well. It's okay to lend to strangers. Deuteronomy 29, verse 19, 20. Who is that? Had that one? Malcolm, go ahead. I totally gave you the wrong passage, Malcolm. Well, I'm glad you read it, though. You did a good job reading it.
Isn't it 23, 19, 20?
It might be 23. Flip over to 23. Deuteronomy 23, verse 19, 20. I'll read this since I totally ruined it already. Okay, here we go. Thou shalt not lend upon usury to thy brother, usury of money, usury of victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury, unto a stranger thou mayest, yeah, there we are, unto a stranger thou mayest lend unto usury, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend unto usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all that thou settest thy hand to in the land whither thou goest to possess it. What's it saying? Nice and simply saying this. Hey, it's okay. 23, 19, 20. But it's not okay. Specifically, it's okay to lend and to get money back. You understand what usury is, right? What's usury, folks?
Interest.
That's what it is. So it's literally, you go and you give the money. Okay, let's use the illustration of John again. Okay, if John owes me money, I like this illustration, so I'm going to keep using it. Okay, if John owes me money, okay, if he's not a brother, if he's a stranger, if he's an unsaved person, okay, he's not part of, in this specific context, Israel, then I can go and I can charge him interest. But if he's my brother, let's say John needs $20,000, then what should I do? Give him the $20,000. That's what it's saying, Psalm 23, verse 19, 20. And John, when he pays it back, what does he pay back? $20,000. $10,000. Funny, Robbie, funny. Funny, very funny. Probably true, but funny. Yeah, right? Exactly. Am I making sense here? So, it's okay to lend to strangers and to get interest. It's not okay to lend to brothers and get interest. Okay? So, okay to lend to strangers, no interest to brothers. Okay? Limited collateral. Deuteronomy 24, verses 10 and 11. Just for sake of time, we're going to hurry through that. Basically, release. Every creditor that lendeth ought unto his neighbor shall release it. He shall not exact it of his neighbor or of his brother because it is called the Lord's release. Nice and simply. Let's explain what this means. If I go and I go to John and I say, John, you need some money? Here you go. Here's $20,000. Okay? Right? If it takes, John no longer owes me $20,000 and I can't go after John saying, John, you didn't pay me my $20,000. What's this pointing to? That God doesn't want you to have debt. Because I guarantee you, if that's the case, most people, they ain't lending money. Y'all with me here? Would you lend money to somebody if they waited 7 years and they didn't decide what you gave them? And if they waited more than 7 years, you got nothing back? No! Right? No! But that was God's expectation. God doesn't, yes? God doesn't want you to be borrowing money. And that goes back to our principles, to our foundations. Hey, don't be covetous. Hey, be a good steward. Hey, be real. Real quickly, we're kind of running out of time, so let's go quickly. Debt communicates reasoning. And this is kind of the ending idea. Here's the reality, okay? You say, okay, preacher, I get it. Okay, it changes our relationships. I understand that. Okay, I understand. There's lots of requirements. I get all that. But, I mean, what's the big deal? What's the big deal if I run up a credit card debt on my Kohl's card? What's the big deal if I run up a credit card debt on my Chase card? What's the big deal if I run up a credit card debt? It's not that big of a deal, Pastor. Can I say it is a big deal, not because of the debt, but because of the reason for the debt. Here's what I mean by that. There's always a reason for what we do. Correct? Yes? There's always some kind of root that causes the fruit. Yes? If you're in credit card debt, okay, or any kind of debt, there's a reason why you're there. Sometimes bad things happen. I get that. I'm not diminishing that. But what I am saying is, nice and simply, the Bible does say God's going to take care of His own. Right? God, the Bible does say that God takes care of birds and God takes care of flowers and He's going to take care of your needs. And that's not by going and running up debt. Right? So you would agree with me that most debt is not because of needs. Most debt is because of wants or because of mismanagement. Is that fair? The reality is, friends, I make less probably than just about everybody in this room. Right? I've always made less than everybody in this room, and I will probably continue to always make less than everybody in this room. Yes? Correct. Yes? $38,000 a year, or what have you. Right? I don't have debt. If I don't have debt, apart from a house, then you cannot have debt. Correct? Is that fair? Is that fair? That's what I'm saying. So the reasoning for our debt, like we looked at the very beginning, finances just go and kind of point to where our heart is. That's why finances are important. Where your treasure is, there your heart is. Right? Where you put your money, that shows you where your heart is. And if your money is in debt, then it points out that there's something wrong in your heart that you need to resolve. Because until you resolve that, you'll never resolve the debt. Because it'll always go back. It'll always come back. So let's look at this. Okay? Debt communicates reasoning. Number one, covetousness. Luke 12, verse 15. Beware, take heed and beware of covetousness, for man's heart conceives not in the abundance of things which he possesses. That's what the verse says. Nice and simply, Jesus is saying, hey, you need to watch out, you need to be careful because of covetousness, because your life is not about how much you have. In the United States of America, our lives are constantly conveyed, hey, what you have is what matters. Right? You cannot watch TV, you cannot watch the Super Bowl, you cannot watch a game, you cannot go to the store, you cannot do anything like that without that being conveyed, can you? If you have this, then you'll be happy. Right? If you have this car, oh man, then your life will be all together. And you go and you get that car, and guess what happens? Your life still ain't all together. Correct? Right? Oh, if you have this outfit, then you'll look so nice, and then everything will be good. You know why I only have gray suits? Because that's all I can afford. Stop making fun of my gray suits. The reality is, friends, catch this. Let me make sense of this, okay? Our lives are not based on what we own, are they? Your life is more than the abundance of things which you possess. So don't think that you just need more. That's what debt is. It's you going and you saying, I need this now. I need this. Don't go there. Covetousness. Okay? Be okay with what God's given you. Again, we're not talking complacency. Contentment is not complacency. Okay? I'm not saying just sit back, don't do anything, just be lazy, whatever. God will provide. No, He won't. Okay? If man doesn't work, he shouldn't eat. Right? But the reality is, by the same token, if you're working and you don't have what somebody down the street has, who cares? Who cares? Doesn't matter. You go and be okay with what God has given you, and you go and be okay with what God's given your neighbor. Doesn't matter. Your life is more than the stuff that you have. So stop living like your life is all about, oh, if I get this, I'll be happy. You will not be happy. You might be happy temporarily, but you won't be happy in the long term. Number one, covetousness. Nice and simply, friends, a lot of times, debt points out a heart of covetousness. I want more. Number two, debt can point out a heart of impatience. Flip over, if you can, to Proverbs chapter 28. Can we? Proverbs chapter number 28. Proverbs chapter 28, verse number 22. I posted this the other day when all of the craziness with the GameStop stock stuff was going on and all that insanity. Proverbs 28, verse 22, it says this. He that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye, and considereth not that poverty shall come upon him. What's it saying? saying, hey, if you're impatient in your finances, I want it now, then what's it going to cause? Poverty. You'll be poor. That's what it's saying. If you say, I want it now, I want this now, I want this outfit now, I want this car now, I want this house now, I want it now. That's our American life, isn't it? I want it now! You can go and you can get it now, but you'll pay for it. Impatience. Wait on God. Trust God. God will take care of your needs, and frankly, God often takes care of our wants. Doesn't He? If you go and you're patient, if you go and you're careful, if you go and you save and you provide and you take care of things, hey, God does and will meet your needs. But wait on God. Don't haste to be there because you're just going to be poor when you get there. Wait on God. Number two, save and prepare for the future. Instead, next time we'll talk about savings and the importance of saving money. Can I tell you, friends? The opposite of debt is savings. Okay? That's the opposite. When we went and we knew we wanted a house and we knew we wouldn't make enough money to get a house, what did we do? For the next 4 years, we saved. Like crazy. You know why? Because we didn't want to owe $100,000 on a house. Am I making sense here? When we went and we knew that we needed a van because, frankly, we have 8 billion kids. Right? And we knew that we needed a van because we couldn't fit them in my little green Ford Focus. You remember that thing? Right? Had like 2 seats. Right? And I couldn't fit them all in there. What did we do? We saved for a van. And guess what? We bought a van. Am I making sense here? And I paid out of pocket for that van. You know why? Because I didn't want a debt on that van. Right? I didn't want debt on that van. So I saved for 4 years for that van to get the van so I didn't have to pay forever on that van. And by the way, I got a used van because that's just smart. Right? And so I paid $9,000 out of pocket for a van while we were saving, while we weren't making money. Why? Because I wanted to wait on God rather than getting the van when I wanted to get the van and spend the money the way I wanted to spend it. Am I making sense here? That is wise stewardship. Again, God entrusted us these things. Do you see how it's building on our foundation, right? Our first foundation is what? Contentment. Goes against covetousness, doesn't it? Our second foundation is stewardship. Hey, don't be impatient. What God has entrusted to you right now is enough for right now. So save it. Prepare. If you see a need in the future, then save now for that need. So that when you get to that point, you can actually pay for that. Rather than going into debt trying to get there. Number three, presumption. James chapter 4. Can we flip over there real quick? Last passage, I promise. James chapter number 4 and verse number 13. James 4 verse 13. God's talking to, in this passage, Jewish businessmen, really. James chapter 4, verse number 13, it says this. Go to now, that's kind of a phrase like, like kind of almost a judgment. Like, let's consider these people and the judgment that they'll face, okay? Go to now, verse 13, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Now, you say, preacher, he's not necessarily talking about that. I get that. Here's what he's saying. He's saying nice and simply, hey, you guys that go and say, hey, we're going to go into this city, and we're going to make a bunch of money there, and we're going to get a bunch of money, and then we'll come back, and then everything will be good. He's saying, let's consider this. Verse 14. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, if the Lord desires, we shall live and do this or that. What's it saying? It's saying, hey, presumption. You know what we do oftentimes when we go into debt? We go and we say, hey, you know, I'm looking at my plan. I'm looking at my budget. Budgets are a good thing. Yes? Budgets are a good thing. We look at our budget. We say, yeah, no. I can go and I can get this car, and I can pay $400 a month for this car. Right? I can pay $400 a month for this car, and it's not a big deal. You know, I can pay $400 a month for the next 3 years on this car. It'll be fine. Well, time out a second. Do you know if you'll have a job next year? Yes or no? No. Do you know if you'll have a major financial problem next year? Yes or no?
No.
Am I making sense here? I'm not, trust me, I'm not against debt in certain circumstances. I owe debt on our house. We had to owe debt on our house. Right? Debt's not a sin, but oftentimes debt is foolish. When we go, though, and we presume and we say, oh, well, everything will continue as they are. Oh, I've got my future together. Rather than, hey, wait a second. You know what? I don't have my future together. Right? I don't know what will be tomorrow, so I'm not going to presume that I'll have it tomorrow. I'm going to save while I know what I have. Let me make sense? Isn't that a more biblical solution? Correct? I'll go and I'll save right now because I know I don't need this money, so I'm going to save it because I know I will need this in the future. That's a much more biblical solution than I want it now, so I will pay in the future for it. You don't know what will be tomorrow, let alone a year, 4 years, 5 years from now. Correct? You don't know what's there. You don't know what you'll have. So don't assume on the future. Instead, go and say, hey, I'll save now, and each day I'll save and I'll save, and when I get there, then I'll be okay. Isn't that a more biblical solution? That's what we're looking at here. Okay? It's a heart. It's presumption. You don't know what tomorrow will hold, so live by faith, not by feelings. Nice and simply, folks, everything in our life boils down to that last fact. Live by faith, not by feelings. You have a debt problem? You're living by feelings, not by faith. You say, that's pretty harsh. A lot of times that's true, though, isn't it? We go and we want this. We want to help out. We want to do whatever. We want to buy something that we think might make us feel better. And we're not trusting what God says. There are a lot of verses, and I didn't even scratch the surface of these, frankly, even though I gave you a bunch. God says, hey, don't go there. Don't do that. Trust me, I'll take care of you. David said, I was once young, now I'm old. I've never seen the righteous forsaken or seed begging bread. God's going to meet your needs. But if we go and we say, hey, I want to meet my wants, then you know what we do? We take that provision out of God's hands and into ours. And I will tell you, none of us are good at meeting what we need. We'll mess it up. We always will. Avoid debt. Can we do that? As a church, we've always tried to avoid debt. As a church, we will always, so long as I'm here, we will always continue to try to avoid debt. Right? I'm not a fan of debt. There may come a point where we may need debt. That's a different topic. But right now, we certainly don't want debt. Correct? Avoid it. As church individuals, avoid debt. You will have so much more freedom. You will have so much more emotional well-being if you just avoid it. Save, prepare, equip. We'll look at savings next time. Save, be ready for it, and then just trust God with the stuff you don't have. You don't need it all. It doesn't matter. It's not that important. Trust God, wait on God, and then God will meet your needs. Let's close in prayer if we can. Let me encourage you, if you need specific help with something like this, I'd be glad to help you out, okay? You say, Pastor, I need some financial counseling or something like that. Trust me, I would be glad to help however I can on that front. But think about these principles, every one of us. And let's close in prayer, and then we'll let you guys go. Dear Heavenly Father, we love you. We thank you for your love and grace. Lord, thank you for the financial guidance that you've given in your word. Lord, thank you that your word gives us everything that we need, both for our life on this earth and for godliness in that life which is to come. Lord, I pray that you would help us to not just hear these things, but to apply them. And Lord, I have no doubt that there's some in this room that have some debts, some financial obligations that they've built up over the years and built up over time. Father, I pray that you would release them from, as the book of Proverbs says in another passage, release them from the snare of the plow or from that trap that they found themselves in. Lord, that they would escape from that, and Lord, that you would provide that escape as only you can. Lord, I pray that you would help all of us, regardless of where we are in this topic, Lord, to have the right heart in our money. Lord, I hope that I've conveyed the reality of money. Lord, one day when we stand before you, we won't give account of what's in our bank account, but we will give account of why it's in our bank account. And so, Father, I pray that you would help us and strengthen us to have a proper mindset in these financial matters. And Lord, help us to remove from our minds covetousness, presumption. Help us to remove from our minds these ideas of impatience that we need it now. And Lord, help us to just simply trust you over our feelings. Strengthen us in these things as only you can. Lord, give provision and give protection to all of us in the days to come. In Jesus' name we pray these things. Amen.